All right, let's come to order and go on the record, please. I'm Charlotte Mitchell, Chair of the North Carolina Utilities Commission, and with me this morning are Commissioners Daniel G. Clodfelter and Kimberly W. Duffley. There you are, Commissioner Duffley. I now call for hearing docket number EMP 118 sub 0, which is in the matter of the application of Timbermill Wind LLC for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct a merchant plant wind energy facility with a capacity of up to 189 megawatts to be located in Chewan County, North Carolina. And docket number EMP 118 sub 1, which is in the matter of the application of Timbermill Wind LLC for a certificate of environmental compatibility and public convenience and necessity to construct an approximately 6-mile 230 kV transmission line. On June 14th, 2021, Timbermill Wind, to which I will refer as the applicant, filed in the sub-zero docket an application pursuant to North Carolina Journal Statute 62-110.1 and Commission Rule R8-63 for a CPCN, along with a pre-filed testimony of Jimmy Merrick, Depeche Rana, Ellen Balfrey, Emmanuel Wimacoy, and Jeremy Spieth. The applicant also submitted its registration as a new renewable energy facility pursuant to Commission Rule R866. On June 21st, 2021, the applicant filed in the sub 1 docket an application pursuant to 62-101-102-104, as well as Commission Rule R8-62 for a CE-CPCN, along with a pre-filed testimony of Emmanuel Wimacoy, Jeremy Merrick, and Jeremy Spieth. On June 22nd, 2021, the Commission issued an order in the sub 1 docket scheduling a public hearing and requiring public notice and clearinghouse review. On July 22nd, 2021, due to the overlapping nature of the applicant's requests, the Commission issued an order consolidating the sub 0 and the sub 1 proceedings, setting the deadlines for the filing of direct and rebuttal testimony, requiring the applicant to file additional testimony and exhibits addressing certain questions set forth in the order, and setting the schedule for the hearings on the applications. The order set the public witness hearing for October 14th, 2021, and the expert witness hearing for today, October 27th, 2021. On July 27th, 2021, Mr. Patrick Flynn filed a document in the sub 1 docket on behalf of his wife and himself, requesting to intervene in the docket and to be allowed to appear at the public witness hearing, as well as commenting on the application. On July 30th, 2021, the North Carolina State Environmental Review Clearinghouse filed its comments in the sub 1 docket. On August 11th, 2021, the North Carolina State Environmental Review Clearinghouse filed additional comments in the sub 1 docket. On August 25th, 2021, the applicant filed the supplemental testimony of Jimmy Merrick. On August 26th, 2021, the North Carolina State Environmental Review Clearinghouse filed its comments and requests for additional information in the sub-zero docket. On September 29th, 2021, the public staff filed the testimony of Jeff Thomas, a portion of which was identified as being confidential. On October 4th, 2021, Mr. Flynn filed additional comments in the docket. On October 8th, 2021, the Commission issued an order acknowledging the files of Mr. Flynn to be public comments and denying his petition to intervene. On October 11th, 2021, in light of the transmission rates associated with COVID-19, the Commission issued an order directing that the expert witness hearing would be held remotely by way of WebEx and establishing remote procedures for this expert witness hearing. On October 14th, 2021, the public witness hearing took place at the Chewan County Courthouse for the purpose of receiving public witness testimony regarding the applications. On October 15th, the applicant filed the direct testimony of Hank Seltzer in substitution of direct testimony that had been pre-filed on behalf of Bree Anderson. Also on October 15th, 2021, the applicant filed a motion to cancel the evidentiary hearing. On October 20th, 2021, both the applicant and the public staff filed notices of consent to hold the expert witness hearing remotely, and that brings us to today. All right, before we begin, and in compliance with the State Government Ethics Act, I remind members of the Commission of our duty to avoid conflicts of interest and inquire at this time as to whether any commissioner has a known conflict of interest with respect to the matters coming before us this morning. All right, the record will reflect that no conflicts have been identified. So I now call upon counsel for the parties to announce their appearances for the record, and we'll begin with the applicant.
Good morning, Commissioners. Merrick Parrott with the law firm Parker Poe Adams and Bernstein here tonight, here this morning on behalf of Timber Millwind LLC.
Good morning, Catherine Ross, also with Parker Poe Adams and Bernstein, appearing on behalf of Timber Millwind.
All right, good morning, Ms. Parrott and Ms. Ross. All right, public staff.
Morning, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Robert Josie, and along with Rita Coxton, we represent the public staff on behalf of the using and consuming public.
All right, good morning, Mr. Josie and Ms. Coxton. Okay, a few comments in light of the fact that we're conducting this hearing remotely. We are all very familiar now with how to proceed remotely, but just a few reminders. Please pay attention to your mute button. Unmute yourself only if you must speak. Otherwise, do us a favor, remain muted. Please be cognizant of the fact that the court reporter is transcribing this proceeding, so take care not to disrupt her ability to hear. When you do speak, please speak slowly, speak clearly, so that she may accurately transcribe what is being said. All right, and just as a final point, it's my understanding that the parties have indicated that they do not intend to use examination exhibits today. I'll check in with counsel one last time to confirm that that is the case. Just give me a head nod. Okay, I see Ms. Parrott indicating that that is the case. Mr. Josie, all right, so we will not use cross-examination exhibits today. All right, a few preliminary procedural matters before we get started with our witnesses. On October 26th, which was yesterday, the applicant filed on behalf of itself and the public staff a joint motion for witnesses to be excused from appearance at the evidentiary hearing. The applicant states in its motion that all parties have agreed to waive cross-examination of the applicants and the public staff witnesses and offer no objection to the introduction of their testimony and exhibits into the record of evidence in this proceeding. The applicant and the public staff request that their respective witnesses be excused from appearing at this expert witness hearing, and that the pre-filed testimony and exhibits be received into evidence and made a part of the record. All right. The commission finds good cause to grant this motion in part as follows. We will excuse, barring objection from my fellow commissioners, we will excuse the applicant's witnesses, Wimacoy, Spieth, and Seltzer, and I apologize for mispronunciation. I am certain that I have mispronounced their names. But again, Wimacoy, Spieth, and Seltzer are excused from the hearing this morning. The commission has questions for the applicant's witnesses, Merrick, Rana, and Balfrey, and Mr. Thomas. We have questions for you as well, so we will not excuse the public staff's witness. Okay, at this time, I will turn to the applicant and ask for, well, first check to see if there are any other preliminary matters we need to address. If there are not, let's go ahead and get started with moving some of your evidence into the record.
Yes, Madam Chair. The only question I would have is for the witnesses not excused this morning, that we would like for them to appear as a panel. We believe that will be most efficient. We've discussed that with the public staff, do not believe they have any objection. And if it is acceptable to the commission, we would have Ms. Belfry, Mr. Merrick, and Mr. Rana appear as a panel.
All right, Mr. Josie, I see that you have indicated that you do not object to the applicant's witnesses appearing as a panel. So just to make sure we're clear on the record, I want to check in with my fellow commissioners, make sure they're okay with that. I'm not hearing any objection from Commissioners Kleinfelter and Duffley. So your witnesses may appear as a panel, Ms. Ross.
Great. And I will invite witnesses Wimacoy, Spieth, and Seltzer to go off video if they want to listen in or to log in as an attendee or to exit completely at their wish, and thank them for their time, this brief time this morning, and thank the commission. And with that, if it's appropriate, we do not intend to make an opening, but with that, we would call our first witness, which would, from the panel perspective, to move into direct, which would be Ellen Belfry.
All right, Ms. Ross, before we do that, why don't we move your, let's just so that the record is, let's keep the record in order. Let's move in your, I'll take a motion to move in your application as well as the testimony and exhibits of the witnesses that we've excused this morning.
Yes, Chair, we would make a motion to move in the application for the certificate of public convenience and necessity, as well as the application for the certificate of environmental compatibility, public convenience and necessity in the consolidated dockets of EMP 118, as well as the pre-filed testimony and exhibits of witness Wee McCoy, Spaeth, and Seltzer.
All right, hearing no objection to that motion, it will be allowed. All right, if there is no additional evidence at this time, let's go ahead with your, you may call your witnesses, Ms. Ross.
Great. At this time, we would ask Ms. Belfry to come to the stand as our first witness on our panel.
Okay, let's, I've got a, let's call all of them so we can just do the affirmation once.
Perfect. Then we would request Ms. Belfry, Mr. Merrick, excuse me, and Mr. Rana to come to the stand to be sworn in.
All right. I see there's Ms. Belfry, and let's see, Mr. Merrick, there you are. And Mr. Rana, where are you? There you are. Okay. Would you all please raise your right hands? You affirm that the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. All right, please indicate verbally for purposes of the record that you affirm.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right, perfect. Yes, All right, Ms. Ross, you may proceed.
Thank you. Ms. Belfry, would you please state your name and business address?
Ellen Belfry, my business address is 310 4th Street Northeast, Suite 300, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902.
By whom are you currently employed and in what capacity?
I'm the Senior Vice President of Finance for Apex Clean Energy.
Did you cause to be pre-filed on June 14th, 2021, 3 pages of direct testimony in question and answer form to support the Merchant Plant CPCN application in docket EMP 118 sub-zero?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your testimony?
No.
If I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same as they appear in your pre-filed testimony?
Yes.
At this time, I would move that Ms. Belfry's pre-filed direct testimony be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand.
All right, hearing no objection to your motion, it is allowed.
Ms. Belfry, would you please describe your job responsibilities as they relate to the Timber Mill Wind Energy Facility?
I manage the team that's responsible for financing the projects that Apex develops. So we obtain the capital to build and construct the project.
Thank you. At this time, Ms. Belfry is, at this time we would move on to the direct examination of Jimmy Merrick as a panelist, if that is okay with the commission.
All right, you may.
Thank you. Mr. Merrick, will you please state your name and business address for the record?
Yes, my name is Jimmy Merrick, and my business address is 310 4th Street Northeast, Suite 300, Charlottesville, Virginia.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I'm employed by Apex Clean Energy as a development manager.
Did you cause to be pre-filed on June 14th, 2021, 14 pages of direct testimony in Q&A form and one exhibit to support the Merchant Plant CPCN application in docket EMP 118 sub-zero?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your testimony?
I do not.
Did you also cause to be pre-filed on June 21, 2021, 3 pages of direct testimony in Q&A form to support the transmission line CECPCN application in docket EMP 118 sub 1?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to that testimony?
I do not.
Lastly, did you cause to be pre-filed on August 25th, 2021, 5 pages of supplemental testimony in Q&A form and 5 exhibits in support of the CPCN and CECPCN applications?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to that testimony?
I do not.
And if I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same as they appear in your pre-filed testimonies?
Yes, they would.
Mr. Merrick, are you aware that a revised site plan was filed on September 21st, 2021?
Yes.
And does that revised site plan change your testimony?
It does not.
Thank you. At this time, I would move that Mr. Merrick's pre-file direct testimony and supplemental testimonies be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that the exhibits to his testimony be marked for identification and included in the record.
All right, hearing no objection to your motion, Ms. Parrott, it will be allowed, and it will be allowed. All right, I'll stop there.
Thank you. Mr. Merrick, finally, will you please describe your job responsibilities as they relate to the Timbermill Wind Energy Facility?
Sure. As a development manager, my responsibilities include managing all stages of development from concept to construction. This includes leasing, transmission, public outreach, permitting, such as environmental permitting, land use permitting, and I also support the engagement in power marketing and financing of the projects, and I share responsibility for the development of the Timbermill Wind facility with a multidisciplinary team within APEX.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. That concludes our direct testimony with Mr. Merrick, and we're ready to proceed to our last witness on the panel, Mr. Rana.
All right, please do so.
Mr. Rana, would you please state your name and business address for the record?
Sure. My name is Dipesh Rana, and my business address is 310 4th Street Northeast, Suite 300, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902.
By whom are you currently employed and in what capacity?
I am employed by Apex Clean Energy as the senior manager of transmission and interconnection.
Did you cause to be pre-filed on June 14th, 2021, 6 pages of direct testimony in question and answer form, and 1 exhibit to support the merchant plant CPCN application in docket EMP 118 sub-zero?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your testimony?
I do not.
If I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same as they appear in your pre-filed testimony?
Yes, they would.
At this time, I would move that Mr. Rana's pre-filed direct testimony be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that the exhibit to his testimony be marked for identification and included in the record.
All right, hearing no objection to that motion, Ms. Ross, it will be allowed.
Thank you. Mr. Rana, would you please briefly describe your job responsibilities, responsibilities as they relate to the Timbermill Wind Energy Facility?
Sure. So as senior manager for of transmission and interconnection here at APEX, I'm responsible for managing the interconnection portfolio and associated studies of that portfolio for APEX's generation resources and its assets across multiple independent system operators and multiple utility footprints, including within PJM interconnection. My responsibilities specifically include reviewing, managing, and negotiating interconnection agreements and associated technical studies, including the feasibility and system impact studies within PJM. Providing strategic, regulatory compliance, technical, and financial input to other stakeholder departments and subject matter experts within APEX for the grid integration of renewable energy facilities that APEX has in its portfolio, and specifically on transmission and interconnection related matters, also including filing interconnection request application packages and tracking their progress through the interconnection queue life cycle, including that, of course, of Timbermill Wind's facility.
Thank you. Chair Mitchell, at this time, our panelists are prepared for commission questions.
All right, thank you, Ms. Ross. I will check in with my colleagues to see if they have questions for the panel. Commissioner Clodfelter, starting with you, no questions. All right, Commissioner Duffley.
No questions.
All right, I do have some questions for your panel, Ms. Ross, so I will go ahead and just get started. I'm gonna direct the questions to the panel. Any of you answer my questions as appropriate. And if multiple of you would like to respond, that's perfectly fine. All right, section 2 of the specifications on the ISA, the interconnection services agreement. Capacity interconnection rights at the point of interconnection are specified as 39 megawatts. One of you all shake your head to make sure you know what I'm talking about. Okay, Mr. Rana, looks like you're gonna be answering these questions. All right, help me understand what this means. The facility as identified in the interconnection services agreement was a 300 megawatt facility. The CPCN indicates the facility is going to be up to 189 megawatts. And then there's this sort of interconnection rights at point of interconnection specified as 39. So help me understand specifically what the 39 megawatts are and what that means for purposes of the project and how that relates to the 189.
Sure. So PJM has most RTOs actually have two buckets of interconnection rights. One is energy, and this is defined, and the other is capacity. It's easy to interpret capacity as a generic term within PJM. Capacity interconnection rights is a defined term, and essentially what that means is at what amount of the project's output can be allocated to firm service to serve network load during peak demand periods. Given that Timber Mill is a wind project, which is dependent on wind resource and is intermittent in nature, it cannot be expected to serve 100% of its output to meet 100% of the load demands 100% of the time throughout the whole year. So the 39 megawatts is a function of the average capacity factor and the ability of the project to service that peak load during very specific time periods. And this is a standard in PJM, which is, more recently, this terminology has been called the effective load carrying capability or the ELCC. Previously, PJM, at the time that Timber Mill was studied, was assigning, depending on the type of technology, in this case, wind, class average capacity factors of about 13% to the projects, especially wind projects, which is where the 39 megawatts come from. To the second part of your question, how does this compare to the overall output, which, as currently contemplated by the project design is 189 megawatts? It does not in any fashion or form limit the project's ability to put out 189 megawatts. All it says is that if this project's output is used to serve network load during specific periods, the amount that that project can bid into the PJM capacity markets would be limited to 39 megawatts. And then the other megawatts, the project can participate in the PJM markets through the energy wholesale markets. Does that answer your question?
It does. It does. Thank you. Actually, your response was very helpful. All right. And just so I'm clear, and I think you said this, but I'm going to ask you to say it again. The 39 megawatts was calculated using the class average capacity factor of 13%. PJM didn't actually apply ELCC here, just due to the age of the interconnection services agreement. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay. And a follow up for you, and you've sort of answered this, but again, just want to make sure I'm clear in my mind. The 39 megawatts has more to do with what the project can bid into the capacity market and has no bearing on the output that was studied for purposes of the interconnection request.
That's correct.
Okay. So the project can to the extent that the project is actually producing at 189 megawatts, it's not going to cause a problem under the interconnection services agreement.
No, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. All right. Let's see. Last question sort of on interconnection related issues. Mr. Ron, I'm just going to assume you're going to answer this one. The capacity studied was 300 megawatts. The current project design contemplates 189, as I understand the application and your testimony just now. Will this reduction in capacity impact the studies that PJM has already performed?
No, it will not, simply because the project does not have any other system upgrades that were identified for any other portion, does not have dependency on other projects other than the facilities required for the point of interconnection. The facilities required at the point of interconnect would be the same facilities even if we had submitted the project as a 189 megawatt project and PJM had studied it as a 189 megawatt project. So the short answer to your question is simply no, simply because there are no other upgrades, and hence even with a reduction, it can only help other projects by removing 110 megawatts of previously studied service now made available to somebody else or some other project.
Okay. And so, okay. So the reduction in capacity wouldn't be viewed by PJM as a material modification to the interconnection request?
It would not. And because it does not have an adverse impact on costs or timing of other projects, under PJM's rule, that is what is defined as material modification. And a reduction, like I said, only helps other projects, does not impact their costs or timing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Rana. All right. Few questions about sale of the output from the facility. It's my understanding your testimony makes clear that there's no at present there's no contract for the sale of the output. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Have you all taken any action with respect to selling into PJM? I know your testimony indicates that it's one possibility, but have you actually taken definitive steps to that end?
Do you mean in the market or as far as talking to customers?
Selling into the PJM energy market or capacity?
No, not at this point.
Okay. Your testimony also indicates that the company is engaged in discussions with numerous potential off-takers, including utilities regulated by the commission. If the facility were to sell to Duke, would the facility have to pay, would that type of arrangement, let me just ask my question this way, would that type of arrangement require the payment of for transmission service through PJM?
Dipesh, you might know better.
I think it depends. It may require transmission service through PJM, but I cannot say with certainty without knowing exactly where the project would or where Duke would like to take service from the project in this hypothetical scenario.
So are you saying then, Mr. Rana, that if the project, if you all were to enter into a deal with Duke, you perhaps would contemplate a different point of interconnection?
No, not a different point of interconnection. I'm saying different point of withdrawal. Point of withdrawal meaning where that contract would settle. The point of interconnection is not going to change.
Okay, fair. All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Balfrey, this is a hypothetical for you. If the facility were to sell into PJM and energy market and or capacity or ancillary services, would it be necessary for the facility to enter into another financial transaction such as a contract for differences in order to be able to obtain financing for the project?
It's not necessary. It's the most likely that it would. It's more typical for a project to be financed with some sort of long-term contract.
So that's the benefit of the contract for differences. It just provides some long-term certainty and revenue for the project. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Usually that would be something like a 12 to 15 year contract.
Okay. All right. Your testimony addresses public staff's concern about the change in turbines. Have you alerted Chowan County about the change in turbine?
I can take that one, Commissioner. The county is aware that we've changed turbines. Yes.
Okay. Does that change have any bearing on the approvals that the county has already issued to you all?
No, the turbine we're proposing at this stage still adheres to the Chowan County CUP.
Okay. The public staff mentions in its testimony that there are site control agreements that have expired or are about to expire. Counsel for the applicant filed a letter in this docket on October 18th. Is that correct? Addressing the site control.
Correct.
Agreements. Yeah. Is that correct? All right. And Mr. Merrick, can you help me understand what the letter said?
Yes. I can flip to it, but in summary, basically, since filing, a handful of agreements had expired, and then we went ahead and proactively amended or extended those agreements. And at this stage, we have 100% site control for all property within the project area where we're proposing to locate facilities. So there are no more unexpired site control agreements for Timber Mill at this time.
All right, and thank you for that clarification, Mr. Merrick. And that includes property for the actual generating facility as well as for the transmission line.
Correct, for both, yes.
All right, thank you. Do you, Mr. Merrick, update me on the status of the clearinghouse review for the generating facility? Well, for both projects, where is the clearinghouse on both of these projects?
When you say clearinghouse, are you referring to the Department of Defense?
No, it's the North Carolina clearinghouse where that collects comments from various agencies that have jurisdiction here. I'm just curious as to whether you all have completed the archaeological survey.
So as far as the archaeological survey goes, we are still wrapping up field work with regards to that. And we've coordinated with SHPO to ensure that we're still in alignment with the methodology that was previously approved. And so once we wrap up the field work associated with that, we'll plan to submit a report to SHPO in the coming weeks here. And as they've sort of indicated in a letter in the docket, they would plan to review that within 30 days of receipt.
Okay. So am I hearing, is your testimony, Mr. Merrick, that you all are working towards completion of the archaeological survey and in doing so in coordination with SHPO and envision completing that process soon?
That's correct. This is a result of some shifts in the facility. As you're aware, we submitted an updated layout in September, and so we had to restudy a few areas to finalize the report before we were able to submit it to SHPO.
Okay. All right. Timeline to development. Your materials in the record indicate that potential in-service date of October 2023. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate.
Still the plan, October 2023, you all could be in service.
Yes.
Okay. For construction of the 230 kV line, is that something that you all would construct yourselves, or who actually constructs that line?
Yes, Timbermill Wind would be responsible for the construction of the transmission line, and then Duke Energy North Carolina would be responsible for the construction of the interconnection switching station. And so there's sort of a change of hands there, but from the collection station and the approximately six mile transmission line, Timbermill would be responsible for that.
Okay, and Mr. Merrick, do you mean Dominion Energy North Carolina? You said Duke Energy,
yes.
Okay.
Sorry, yes, Dominion Energy North Carolina.
Okay. All right, Mr. Merrick, what can you tell me about the operating profile of the facility? At what point? I'm going to ask you sort of an open-ended question here. Describe the operating profile of the facility.
As far as generation?
Yes.
Typically, just with wind in general, it has the ability to operate 24/7 whenever the wind resource is strong enough to turn the turbines. We see higher generation numbers typically at night and in the early morning.
What about winter time?
To my knowledge, yes, winter time is also has a stronger wind resource than in the summer.
Has the company conducted sort of studies of the wind resource specific to this site that you can describe for us?
Yes, we've had wind measuring devices, MET towers, and also SODAR units dating back to 2013. So at this point, we have a tremendous amount of wind data that's very reliable. So it's been well studied and it's well understood.
And is there anything you can tell me about the alignment of output from the facility with either the PJM peak or the DEP peak?
I don't have the expertise to answer that question.
Okay. All right. I have nothing further. I will see if Duffley, Kleidfeld, or anything. Okay. Questions on commissioners' questions. Mr. Josie, I'll start with you.
Questions.
No questions. Okay. Ms. Ross, Ms. Parrott, any questions?
Chair, one moment.
Okay.
No, ma'am. At this point, we have no further questions for the witnesses. Thank you.
All right. At this point, then, there's nothing further for you all. You may step down and you may be excused. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Chair, as we exit from a procedural perspective after the witnesses are up the stand, should we anticipate an order for proposed orders, or should we address that here on the record now?
Well, we have questions for public staff witness Thomas.
Oh, apologies. Yes. Thank you.
We'll move through this one quickly. We're almost to the finish
line.
Awesome. I got to ask, I've got some questions for Mr. Thomas, and then we'll get to post-hearing matters.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Thomas, I need to see you on camera. And Mr. Josie, y'all may call your witness.
Public staff calls Jeff T. Thomas to the stand.
Good morning.
All right, Mr. Thomas, raise your right hand, please, sir. You affirm the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
All right, you may proceed, Mr. Josie.
Please state your name, position, and business address for the record.
My name is Jeff Thomas. I'm an engineer with the Public Staff Energy Division, and my business address is 430 North Salisbury Street, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27603.
And did you cause to be pre-filed in this docket on or about September 29th, 2021 testimony in question and answer form consisting of 18 pages and one appendix?
I did.
And do you have any additions or corrections to your testimony?
I do not.
If you were to be asked those same questions today, would your answers be the same?
They would.
Madam Chair, I request that the testimony of Mr. Thomas be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand.
Motion's allowed.
The witness does not have a summary and is now available for commission questions.
All right, Mr. Thomas, let me check in with Commissioners Clodfelter, Duffley. Questions for Mr. Thomas. All right, Mr. Thomas, I've got a few for you. All right, Mr. Thomas, I assume you heard my questions that I directed to the applicant just a moment ago about operating profile. The applicant just testified that the facility has higher generation or has more output in the winter hours than in the summer hours. Do you generally agree with the applicant's testimony on this point?
Yes, I've reviewed their P50 production profile as well, and I do agree with their summary of that.
Okay, and what can you tell me about alignment of the output of this facility with peak needs and either PJM or in DEP?
Well, DEP is certainly more winter planning than PJM. I think PJM is still summer planning. DEP, this output profile would complement DEP's needs. And in fact, DEP's 2020 IRP called for onshore wind resources in the future. And since their peak is normally between 6 to 8 a.m. in the morning, the output profile for wind is pretty high then, as well as in the late hours in the winter. PJM is a little bit different. The wind facility still produces in the summer, but the average output in the summer, particularly during the summer peak, is a little on the lower side, relatively lower. It would still be able to provide energy and capacity, but it's certainly, in my opinion, a better fit for DEP in terms of the planning mechanism.
All right, thank you, Mr. Thomas. Anything else you can tell me about potential operating benefits that this facility would provide to the DEP, BA, or into PJM?
Sure, yeah. So one of the areas of need for the facility that I highlighted in my testimony was the Virginia Clean Energy Economy Act. And so that law does provide and require 100% carbon free and a significant amount of renewables. And so this facility can certainly satisfy Dominion Power's need for that renewable energy accordance with that law. And then just in terms of the capacity that it can provide, just talking about Duke's IRPs as well, the estimated load carrying capability, or the also known as the capacity value for wind in the winter morning, is much higher than it is for solar. And so certainly a diversity of resources, particularly intermittent generation, can be helpful for DEP in terms of meeting its peak load and reducing the need to build additional generation.
All right, thank you, Mr. Thomas. Moving on to a different topic, you testified that as recently as February 26th of this year, 2021, PJM representatives have confirmed that the Timber Mill Wind project doesn't rely on any affected system upgrades. How was this in conversation between you and someone at PJM? How did you get that confirmation from PJM?
Sure. So that information was submitted by the applicant. I believe it was through a data request through discovery. It was an email between Apex representatives, Timber Mill representatives, and PJM, stating that reaffirming rather that there was no affected system upgrades. And you know, something interesting about this project relative to other projects, EMP projects that have been on this before this commission in recent weeks, is that this project is in the PJM Z cluster. And so we've seen recent projects in the AD, AE, and AC clusters. So the Z cluster, the vast majority of projects in the Z cluster are already either in service or withdrawn. They have been studied. That cluster began in, I believe, 2013. So these projects have been studied. and so there's really, they're baked into PJM's baseline with 100% commercial success probability. And you know, DEP in particular didn't really start to see these types of affected system studies from the Dominion North Carolina territory until about the AA, AB clusters. So this one was predated those problematic clusters.
All right, thank you, Mr. Thomas. And that leads me to my next question for you. The public staff in another of the EMP dockets that's presently before us took the position that even though affected system upgrades may not be indicated at this time, the public staff couldn't be certain that such affected system upgrades might be necessary at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And here, I read the public staff's testimony to be a bit more definitive on the issue of affected system costs, affected system upgrades and affected system costs. Am I reading that correctly? And just explain again, if that is the case, why it's the case.
Sure. So just to be clear, I believe you're referring to public staff witness Evan Lawrence's testimony in EMP 114 or Oak Trail. Is that?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So that in Evan's testimony or Mr. Lawrence's testimony, he pointed out that that facility is part of the AD and AE clusters, and Duke had just finished its affected system study for the AC cluster. And so even though at the time, Mr. Lawrence had not identified any affected system upgrades, there was still the possibility that projects assigned affected system upgrades in the AC cluster could withdraw, and that responsibility for those particular upgrades could be passed on to the AD clusters and the AE clusters. Obviously, it would take a certain combination of withdrawals and upgrades and contingency there to trigger that type of cascading, shifting of upgrades. But it was still a very real possibility, given the fluid and given the tens of thousands of megawatts that are in the AC through AE clusters. But as I said, as Mr. Lawrence had testified to, Duke had just completed its AC affected system study, and Timbermill is in the AZ cluster. So everything that Duke is doing in terms of studying this interconnection and issues with PJM facilities interconnecting, that's already all baked into the baseline. As I said, most of the Z facilities are either withdrawn or in service. Timbermill is one of very few projects that are in suspension mode or active. So we assume, and I believe it's a safe assumption, that Duke has moved on from the Z cluster. There's no upgrades identified. And the affected system process, really does begin with PJM walking through this, identifying potential, notifying Duke, and then Duke is able to then study that as the affected utility. And that process has already played out with the Z cluster, the AA cluster, the AB cluster, and is currently going forward with the AC cluster. So we believe that this project is well enough in most baselines to not have even the potential to trigger any sort of cascading upgrades on the DEP system.
All right, thank you, Mr. Thomas. That's helpful. And so the record is clear, a moment ago you said the project, you referenced cluster AZ, but I think you meant just cluster Z. Is that correct?
Yes, I meant just cluster Z is the Timbermill cluster.
Okay. All right. The Mr. Thomas, the public staff recommends issuance of the certificate for the transmission line, even though the archaeological survey is not yet complete. Is that correct?
I believe that my testimony had recommended that the CE CPCN and the CPCN both be withheld until the required archaeological survey is completed. Essentially, there's no reason to grant one without the others. They're both needed, but I believe that was my testimony, what I testified to.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe I stated that the commission issued the CPCN and the CECPCN after the applicant files a letter with the commission stating that it has resolved the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources concerns, and that's on page 17.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clearing me up on that one.
Sure.
All right. Okay, Mr. Thomas, you have answered all of my questions. Thank you very much, sir, for your testimony. I will see if Commissioners Klodfelter, Duffley, anything for Mr. Thomas? Okay. All right. Ms. Ross, any questions for Mr. Thomas based on my questions?
Yes, Chair. Just very, very briefly for Mr. Thomas, perhaps for clarity of the record, I believe it is the clearinghouse that would file notification of no further comments or concerns by the Department of Cultural Resources, State Historic Preservation Office, related to the applicant providing Department of Cultural Resources the archaeological study plan. Is it fair to say that the public staff is looking for the clearinghouse to provide a letter that process is complete rather than the applicant?
Yes, I believe you are right. That is generally the process that would be followed. The Department of Natural Cultural Resources would notify the state clearinghouse and they would file the letter.
Thank you. Based on that, I have no further questions.
All right, Mr. Josie, questions for your witness?
No questions.
All right, well, Mr. Thomas, thank you very much for your testimony before us today, sir. And we appreciate it. You may step down and you are excused.
Thank you.
All right, at this point, Mr. Jesse, I'll check in with you to make sure nothing else, no other motions are necessary on your evidence.
No.
Okay, we've got, all right. All right. With that, then we are at the conclusion of the hearing today. We will take proposed orders. You certainly can submit it as soon as you'd like to. Typically ask for them within 30 days of the filing of the notice of the transcript, notice of the availability of the transcript. Again, get them in as soon as you'd like, and you don't necessarily have to wait on the transcript. With that, I'll pause to see if there are any additional questions from council before we adjourn. All right, hearing none, we will be adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.